Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to The Tom Woods Show, episode 2397. I thought, you know, I don't know if this is ever going to happen in real life, so doggone it, we're going to do it with stand-ins. We're going to have a debate on the 2024 election, the Republican nomination, who should get it, and we're going to talk specifically about Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. And I have here somebody not officially representing the campaigns, obviously, but people who are partisans of one or the other. And we're going to hash this out a little bit, and it's going to be perhaps heated, but civil. Civil. We're going to show the other side that we can actually be civil. So I have here probably what you're seeing on your screen on the top there is Steve Dace, host of the Steve Dace Show on The Blaze. He's author of numerous books, Fauci and Bargain, in the midst of all the crazy COVID nonsense. And then Gavin Wax, are you actually the head of the New York Young Republican Club?
Yes, I'm the president.
Wow, good for you, man. Okay, so Steve is speaking for Ron DeSantis and Gavin for Donald Trump. Now, I have a copper coin here. We're going to flip the coin to this, and whoever wins the coin toss can decide whether he wants to go first or second, because we'll start off with each of them just talking for a few minutes about what the basic case is. Then we'll let them answer what the other said, and then we're going to do questions and stuff and wrap it up. So let's see. Gavin, I know you less than I know Steve, so I'll let you call it. Do you want, I guess heads is going to be, this will be heads, COVID-19 survivors, 2020 pandemic. I don't know who sent me this. Okay.
And what is tails? I don't know if I want to be the COVID side.
Yeah, exactly. Tails says copper, 0.99 fine. That's tails.
All right, so I'm flipping it. Go with precious metals.
I'll flip it again. Okay. Gavin, what do you want?
Tails.
All right. It is unfortunately heads. They both look like tails, but I promise you this is heads. All right, Steve, would you like to go first or second?
I'll go second.
All right. So, Gavin, give us a few minutes on Trump for 24.
Yeah, listen, my calculus in terms of supporting President Trump for 2024 is probably the same calculus the vast majority of the Republican Party has made. They know his record. They know what he was able to accomplish in his four-year term under massive duress, systemic and institutional pressures from the deep state and the establishment. They know that this was a term of unprecedented economic prosperity, unprecedented peace on the world stage. It was a term that moved the Overton window, that shifted all the discussion from topics of a mundane nature to talking about real issues that are impacting the future of our country, whether it is migration, whether it is foreign interventionism and how that was running rampant under previous Republican administrations. All the other concepts that make up the Trump movement, these really came to the forefront ideologically during his four-year terms, and he was able to effect much of that despite the enormous and unprecedented pressure that he faced during that term in office. And President Trump has also shown himself to be someone who is able to operate outside of the confined ideological prism that really has determined our electoral system for the last two decades. He was able to win over low propensity voters, bring new first-time voters into the equation. And because of that, he was able to create a coalition that's actually able to win elections for Republicans. And his upset win in 2016 proved that by breaking the blue wall. And if we look at the polling today, if we shift a bit to the electoral end of this, if we look at the polling today, he's never polled better compared to his previous two runs. And he continues to show and demonstrate that out of the entire Republican field, not just vis-a-vis DeSantis, but everybody, he polls the strongest, not only against Biden, but every other potential Democrat contender. And we know that this election is going to be crucial for the future of our republic, for the future of our country. And I think many people understand that we need to go with the strongest candidate, a candidate that has a proven track record, a candidate that's able to win the blue belt, to break the blue belt and the blue wall, to flip voters that may have been former Obama voters, that may have been voters who supported Bernie Sanders, but is able to expand the coalition, grow the coalition into a governing majority, and then effectuate policy that way. But all the key issues that I think most voters going into this election are focused on, whether it's the economy, whether it's foreign affairs, whether it's the border crisis, these are issues that Trump has demonstrated successes on and has made a critical part of his platform going back to when he first came down the escalators in 2015, the border crisis, the rising cost of living and lowering standards of living in the United States. And then, of course, the forever wars that he really brought to an end. But he governed, obviously, with peace through strength, walking tall with a big stick. So all of these things and more, we see Trump continues to lead in the primary field. We see he continues to lead in the general election. And beyond just the policy, beyond just the electoral strengths that he brings to the table, I also think his rhetorical style, and I think his style of politicking is refreshing. It's direct. It speaks to the people. People have often attacked his tweets, his mean tweets, how he conducts himself, how he carries himself. But I, and I would argue many others, actually find it refreshing. They find him to be a real person. They find him to be an individual they can relate to, despite the fact that he is a billionaire from New York. And because of that, I think he's able to speak truth to power. And I think he's able to call out the institutional rot that we're facing. He's able to call out a lot of the sinister forces in the Beltway in D.C., that have been manipulating our system, manipulating the strings of government for far too long. And because he's calling it out, because he's direct, because he's forceful, because he's willing to punch back, he is the number one threat to the system. He is the biggest institutional threat to the system at large. And if you want to look at the people and the organizations and the groups and the entities that are really driving the decline, the managed decline of our country, they all view Trump with the greatest level of disdain, and they certainly view him as the biggest threat. And I think that alone, how they're so scared of Trump, how they're willing to pull out all the stops against Trump, how they're willing to go to such lengths to prevent his return to power, even if it means exposing themselves, you know, as frauds, as hypocrites, and as power-hungry tyrants, the fact that they're willing to go to such great lengths to debase themselves in order to stop Trump shows that they really do believe that he is a true threat to the system in a way no other Republican candidate is. So I probably didn't organize this as well as I could, but those are probably the three main buckets that I would put my support for Trump in. On the policy front, how he shifted the Overton window, how he's advanced those policies as far as his actual administration, electoral feasibility, and then, of course, what he brings to the table in terms of his own force of personality, force of character, and the impact that has on the American body politic.
All right. Thank you, Gavin. Steve, now your statement.
Sure. For me, Tom, the case really is as simple as Ron DeSantis is the most successful Republican politician of my lifetime, certainly of this century. He has taken a state in Florida. There's a lot of talk about polls. It's almost become like we're in the middle of football season. It's almost become like the games don't matter that were actually played and the results we actually saw don't matter. We're just going to talk about what the point spread said was supposed to happen or was going to happen. So let's talk about what has actually happened. The last three elections, Republicans have lost a net 3 U.S. senators, a net 8 governorships, and a net 22 members of Congress. And that's what's occurred since Donald Trump took over in January of 2017 with the fewest amount of elected Democrats nationwide since we had seen since before the Great Depression. The right has lost electoral ground comprehensively all over the country. States like Georgia, which were inconceivable to be swing states even 5 or 6 years ago, now are tall mountains for Trump to climb to try and win again in a general election. States, suburbs that had heavily gone to Republicans just by showing up for decades, and heavily suburban states like Arizona and North Carolina, these are now battleground states. We all waited anxiously for the red wave last November, and I was convinced it wasn't just going to be a red wave, it was going to be a red wedding, and that independents would finally show up after they had deserted us the last couple of elections. They would finally show up in droves seeing how openly evil Democrats had become, and they would vote our way. And nope, for the third straight election, we lost independents yet again. And it was closer, but it was also by about 3 points, which was pretty much the margin in every single state. 3 points would have made a big difference in Arizona. 3 points would have made a big difference in Nevada. 3 points would have made a big difference with Herschel Walker. Those 3 points of independence we lost across the country were the margin of error and loss across which really an inexcusable election that Republicans did not perform better in. And yet there was one state, Tom, where we did have a red wedding, not just a red wave, where Democrats were completely annihilated. And that's the state of Florida. Tom, you and I are old enough to remember when Florida created the term hanging Chad. It was a national embarrassment. Florida man was a euphemism for listlessness and loss and making ridiculously immoral and stupid decisions. And now Florida is a state that Ron DeSantis has made redder than Texas in one term. We've had over 500,000 voter registration advantage gained by Republicans in that state. He's fired almost 30 members of the administrative state. he's actually drained the swamp that Trump never drained in Washington, D.C. In fact, he took a lot of swamp creatures and put them throughout his cabinet repeatedly, as a matter of fact. If you look at what happened on election night, and I was sitting here on the Blaze as this was coming in, watching them steal the election up front and calling it out. And yet one place that was notorious for questionable elections pretty much had this thing wrapped up by 11 o'clock Eastern and smoking Red Auerbach cigars, and that was Florida. Ron DeSantis actually does the stuff Trump tweets about. Ron DeSantis actually does the stuff that Trump just bellows about. At some point, we have to stop marketing MAGA and start doing the MAGA. A lot of the Trump messaging begins with the assumption like he wasn't even president before. Here's all the things he's going to do now that he wasn't able to do before when he actually had a Republican Congress. And that assumes that he can get elected again. Again, we always point out the polls. The only polls that matter is Republicans are losing nationwide and have been losing nationwide since 2016. And in fact, many Republican members of Congress and many Republican senators actually performed better in the same states as Donald Trump did in 2016. So I think ultimately you have to look at how Ron DeSantis has been such a success. And this is what I like the most. He did it by defying all the Fox News, Inside the Beltway, incestuous GOP consultancy analysis that you essentially had to stand for nothing in order to win. This is the most right-wing governorship in America. He has made Florida redder than Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, South Carolina. What he has done, he has kicked the racialist out of the schools. He's kicked the Rainbow Jihad out of the schools. He punched Disney in the throat. If you look at what he has done, he's basically wish fulfillment. Ron DeSantis has completely defied all of the GOP consultant class talking points for a decade. And he did it on the largest swing state stage in America. Florida is the largest swing state in the country. So Palm Beach County, where Trump lives now, and Trump moved his entire base of operations to Florida, in fact, under Ron DeSantis from New York, Palm Beach County, where Trump lives, voted Republican. It was the largest gubernatorial election victory in the history of that state. For the first time in the history of this state, not a single Democrat holds any statewide office in Florida. The Democratic Party is nothing. It is nothing but a letterhead in the state of Florida. And so I'd kind of like to see what that might look like on a nationwide basis. But ultimately, the number one reason for me, more than anything, is there are two Trump presidencies in my view, Tom. There was the Trump presidency prior to March 16, 2020. And if we were having this discussion about Trump on March 15, 2020, I probably would have said a lot of the same things that Gavin just said. But then there was the moment when Trump faced his first and only real crisis of his presidency. He absolutely panicked. He handed his entire presidency over to the bedazzled Debbie Birx and Anthony Fauci, even gave Fauci a presidential commendation on his last day in office. He gave Big Pharma a blank check of billions of dollars to create a mass genetic experimental serum that accomplished nothing but poisoning and killing people to this very day across the globe. He's completely unrepentant for it, shows no remorse for it whatsoever. He shows up to funerals and people ask him to show remorse for it. Nothing. Shows up on the campaign trail and people ask him to show remorse for it. Absolutely nothing. Shows up in interviews and people ask him to show remorse for it. Absolutely nothing. In fact, he says, I haven't gotten the credit that I deserve. The only thing he gets credit for is teaching us the term excess deaths. Nobody knew what that meant until COVID-19. So whether it's his lockdowns that he advocated, which to me are the dumbest and most immoral management policy in American history, 10,000 small businesses permanently erased, the largest wealth transfer in American history. We shut down so many family businesses. Nothing very populist about saying the big box stores can all stay open while the mom and pop stands have to all close. If you look at the mental health cliff we are on now, the loss of development for our children as a result of this, the back end of this unmitigated human travesty called lockdowns, and then on top of it, with the ongoing carnage and destruction of Operation Warp Speed. And I can't come up with a better difference between these two guys than this. One guy gives a blank check to companies like Moderna, who had never brought a single product to market successfully before, ever. 0-for-8 in the company's history of more than 20 years. They finally bring one successful product to market, and it's a mass poison. One guy gives corporations a blank check to create a mass poison and shows no remorse for it to us. The other guy takes arguably the most powerful and popular corporation in American history, Disney, and punches it right in the throat and shows absolutely no remorse or regret to them. And to me, that's what I'm looking for. Not to mention, it's time for generational change. We can't, another angry boomer election, two old angry white guys arguing each other about, hey, who took more, who's a better Pfizer salesman, me or you? But we just, nobody 80 years old should ever hold elected office, period. We've got a minimum age requirement for office. There ought to be a maximum age requirement. It is generationally time to turn the page, and it is time to turn the page to somebody who has won where it counts. I don't give a crap or a stroke what the RCP polling average shows. I care about what the poll showed on election day. And I care about what winning on the battlefield, just as we were coming on to do this. DeSantis got another win. They tried to change election law in Florida and say, no, you're going to go ahead and do the drop boxes that Trump gave them $400 million via the CARES Act to impose on the rest of us. DeSantis said, no, beat them in court. Every problem that we have right now, Tom, every single one goes back to March 16th, 2020. It all has been exacerbated. They've all metastasized since then. I know this will be right up your wheelhouse. We've printed over 80% of the U.S. dollars in the history of this country since March 16th of 2020. Who signed that into law, the CARES Act? Who said to Thomas Massie, if you dare defy us, we'll primary you for defying this? Trump did. Everything that we have done that since March 16th, 2020, starting with his leadership, has exacerbated all the problems we have now. Inflation, immigration, everything. They only got to steal the last election because he gave them the ballot harvesting money and then shut the government down to give them an excuse to do it. I wish these things weren't true. Life would be so much better. I wish he were president now. And if he had not made all the mistakes he made throughout 2020, he would be. But the reality is he had one great crisis in his presidency and he failed it miserably. And we're all suffering still to this very day as a result.
All right, Gavin, you can have up to 5 minutes if you like to respond to Steve.
You know, I wish I spoke longer to begin with. I took some notes, so I'm going to try to reply to all of these points that Steve made, no particular order, but as they came to me and I wrote them down. I mean, I guess we'll start with COVID because that seemed to be kind of the ending note to Steve's opening remarks here. Listen, the DeSantis campaign has made their entire focus about COVID, and there's a few ways to approach this. One, electorally, I think it's been a stupid decision. They've beat this topic to death, to death, to death, to death, and it hasn't moved a needle for them. And I know Steve doesn't want to talk about the polls, but when your candidate has simultaneously originally talked about being the more electable version of Trump, and then at the same time trying to talk about, you know, an issue such as COVID, you have to weigh both these things together, and it hasn't done anything for his electability vis-a-vis the primary or vis-a-vis the general election. Polling is all we have right now. So you can ignore it as much as you want, but if this was a campaign that would probably use it more and focus on it more, they probably could have crafted better messaging. But let's actually look into the substance of Steve's points. I see a lot of this kind of rhetorical argument that DeSantis supporters make, where they try to put DeSantis almost in the position Trump was as president around 2020, 2019, and say, oh, well, DeSantis would have operated with 100% hindsight. It's kind of like this revisionist sort of approach to history and to politics, and it's quite ridiculous. The fact of the matter is DeSantis has a longer track record on COVID because obviously his tenure extended into 2021 and beyond. And the facts of the matter are that he was continuing to praise Fauci into 2021. He pushed the vaccine aggressively in his state. His state did have lockdowns. Trump took a federalist approach to the issue. And there are many states, including governors of states that I've had other issues with, but who never locked down and who had positions on COVID that could be described as superior or even to the right of the governor. Now, I think if you boil it down and you compare, you know, both candidates and their records, obviously it's not an exact comparison. It's not apples to apples because obviously DeSantis has had a longer time in office because he's still serving his term and he was overseeing COVID response after Trump had left office. And obviously there's a difference between the federal and state level responses. If you are to try to make a comparison, at the end of the day, there were pros and cons on both sides, and most people have begun to see it that way. And by the time you're done, you know, talking about it to death, it ends up being sort of a wash in terms of, you know, mistakes were made from both individuals, and there were positives made by both individuals. But at the end of the day, this was unprecedented. It was an unprecedented phenomenon, and I think people trying to act like the long tail risks were not high in the beginning, you know, going back to, you know, February, March of 2020, are lying and are deceiving people. Many of the supposed right-wing commentators who have now become COVID hawks were people that were proudly wearing masks up to their eyeballs and posting it publicly. So everyone was wrong on this issue. There was a lot of people that made mistakes because the long tail risks were high. But this issue, again, you could debate it ad nauseum and you could go down to the minutiae of policy, but it really hasn't moved the needle either way. So I wanted to mention that. Now, in terms of the electoral and political arguments that Steve was making about the midterms and the last three elections being lost, this is also another recurring talking point among many DeSantis supporters. At the end of the day, we are in the midst of a political realignment. And that realignment in many ways did start in Florida. It started in 2016 in Florida, where Trump won the state, a state that had been lost the previous presidential cycle. He won it, and he continued to win it into 2022 and 2020. And both times he ran, he spent far less in Florida than DeSantis did. And both times he achieved a higher raw vote count, 600,000 or so for his first race vis-a-vis DeSantis' first gubernatorial race, and more than 1 million more raw votes for his 2020 race versus DeSantis' reelection. Now, obviously, Steve's counter is going to be, well, of course, you can't compare a presidential and gubernatorial results. And I agree, we shouldn't be comparing them, because by that same metric that Steve is bringing up, then someone like a Larry Hogan or a Charlie Baker should be our candidate for the presidential election, because both of them won not just red states, they won deep blue states by very comfortable margins. So if we're going to play this game comparing a gubernatorial result to a presidential result, I think you're going to be extremely mistaken. And also the red wave, it did happen. It just happened in concentrated areas and areas that we did not think. We did very well in purple seats or even in areas that were previously seen as blue seats, and we just didn't do well in other areas. So for example, there was a red wave that came through New York, and if anything, the House majority ran through New York. Does this have something to do with DeSantis? No. Was this something that could be blamed or, you know, scapegoated on Trump? No. There were a lot of races across the country where the candidates ran away from Trump and they also lost. The problem is that the Republican Party writ large has not embraced Trumpism. They haven't embraced the policies, the vision, and even the rhetorical style that Trump has embraced that have brought out these first-time voters, that have brought out these low-propensity voters, these voters that show up only for Trump. And that's a problem with the Republican Party writ large that we need to solve, but it's going to involve moving towards Trumpism. It's not going to involve, as Steve said, re-embracing the suburbs. The suburban reversion is not going to happen on a scale that's going to flip races. And we did our suburban strategy. We did it in 08. We did it in 12. Those numbers are not there. These are people that have BLM signs on their front lawn. And if your strategy is to try to win them over rather than trying to appeal to a working class voter in, say, Michigan, which Trump is, then you're obviously going to be having another loss of an election akin to Romney or McCain. That is the style of politics. That is the direction of the Republican Party that will only lead us backwards. We need to embrace Trumpism as a path to actually flip states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, states that you need to win as a Republican going forward to win a national election. The Sun Belt, there have been certain problems, and obviously 2020 was an exceptional year. It was not a normal year. It's not something that we should usually measure against if we're going to be doing political and electoral analysis. But even then, there were massive gains across the board in trends, even down ballot trends, that were a direct result of Trump and the Trump phenomenon that we should be taking advantage of. We should not be trying to return to a strategy of the past that failed us on more than two separate occasions. You want to talk about three losses, we could talk about all the losses that the Republican establishment has faced. And then obviously, I heard Steve talk a bit about, you know, the bucking the consultant-driven agenda. I forget the exact verbiage he used, but I find it ironic that that's the direction that he would take for his opening remarks, considering that DeSantis is entirely a consultant-driven, focus group-driven candidate. He has been controlled by the consultants. If anything, if I was to talk as if I was a DeSantis supporter for 1 second, I would say that his consultants have done him a great disservice. They've done him a great disservice telling him, one, he could win this race, and two, giving him the advice and the direction, the messaging that he has decided to take during this race. I think it's hurt his reputation. I think it's hurt his political capital. And I think him basically taking on the same consulting crew that has led many former presidential contenders to go down in smokes has been a catastrophe for his candidate. And on the other hand, you look at President Trump, the positions he's taken are positions that he's held since the 1970s, 1980s. I mean, he was talking about trade imbalances. He was talking about getting ripped off. He was talking about, you know, our foreign expenditures on NATO and defending our allies and getting nothing returned for a very long time. These were not talking points. These were not policies that were being advocated for by other Republican candidates or consultants. They were policies that he truly deeply believes, and he went with it, and he advanced these talking points and this agenda. And he achieved great success because of it, winning an unwinnable race, a race that many people thought was going to go to Hillary in 2016, a race where many supposed stalwart conservatives were willing to throw that race to Hillary because they didn't think that Trump was either going to win, or he was conservative enough, or he didn't pass certain purity tests and all the rest. And then the other point I wanted to make is that there was one interesting line that you mentioned, two boomer white guys battling, that we need generational change. I mean, this is really the rhetoric of the left. And you could say what certain segments of the online right have said about Reagan now, but I think it's funny that some of the biggest proponents of Reagan who fall into sort of this zombie Reaganism, these are the same individuals that are now going to turn around and use rhetoric like Steve just did, that say, you know, it's a boomer white guy. That we need generational change. It's very left-wing. It's very reminiscent of Obama. These are vague, empty platitudes. No, Trump can speak for himself. He's clearly taking this entire campaign season by the horns. He's everywhere. His rallies are massive. The energy is there. The crowds are there. His retail politicking is excellent. I mean, there's really no debating the optics and the aura around him hitting these local bars and pizza places and whatever else. You know, you could talk about generational change all you want. You could talk about the age gap between the two candidates, but that energy is not on display with Ron DeSantis. So he may be younger, and that may be the claim that we want to make, that he's the younger candidate, so we need to get behind him. But seeing him on the campaign trail, we're not seeing that youthly spirit. We're seeing that with Trump, believe it or not, regardless of his age. But if really it comes down to an age question, again, I would turn the question back on its head and say, well, how do you feel about Reagan? How would you feel about Reagan and his two terms? Were they utter failures because he was advanced in age for the time? So there was a few other things that I wanted to touch on, but I feel like I'm going over my time and I want to keep this as structured as possible. So I'll pass the floor back off to you guys.
All right, Steve, your response to Gavin, and then I'm going to ask each of you a question.
So much of what Gavin just said is a straw man that he even admitted he was making a straw man argument. I mean, he pointed out, well, Trump got more votes in a presidential election. And Steve's going to come back that we can't count that because there's higher turnout of a presidential election than a gubernatorial election. Well, then you just made a straw man argument and you're preemptively admitting one. I'm not many DeSantis supporters. I'm me. I'm not many COVID hawks. I'm the only man on this planet that has written not one but two best-selling books about COVID. The reality is, and he didn't address any of my substantive issues. He pivoted to several just generic campaign themes. First of all, Trump's barely campaigning. He's basically running the basement dummy campaign this time. He's held one rally. It was July 4th. I saw he's got six events scheduled in Iowa total between now and January the 15th. He has not displayed the same energy as he has before. But even if that were the case, we're still back to somebody wrote Moderna and Pfizer a blank check, and it killed a lot of people, Tom. A lot of people died suddenly. He wrote that check, Tom. Everything else Gavin said is irrelevant in the light of that very moral calculus that Trump made and the lives that were lost as a result. Donald Trump wrote that check. Donald Trump is unrepentant about that check. And as a result, there's really no comparison between anybody else's moral equivalency and him. He alone made these decisions. He alone created the coronavirus task force. He alone appointed the gutless wonder known as Mike Pence to lead it. He alone outsourced his presidency to Anthony Fauci. He alone printed all that money and threatened people like Thomas Massey when they dared to oppose him for it. He alone shut the country down. He alone did these things. He even bragged about it. No, the governors aren't the ones making the case. I am. April 20th, 2020, go into his own Twitter feed and you'll see his tweets admitting he's the one that is doing this. He alone did these things. No one else signed. No governor signed off on 15 days to flatten the curve. The president did. No governor signed off on 30 days to slow the spread. The president did. No governor wrote a check to Pfizer and Moderna with Operation Warp Speed and then said, I should get more credit. He did. He faced one real crisis in this presidency, Tom, and he failed it miserably. And it's the number one reason, and there's no close second, for why we are in the position that we are in today. There's a lot of other things he could address, but they're really irrelevant in this point. He faced one crisis. And he failed. And as a result, the country's been failing ever since. As a result, it's more expensive to buy eggs than it ever has been before. As a result, it's $16 to get a hamburger before you get sides. As a result, we have the most expensive new housing and used car market in American history right now. He made those decisions, right? Those people died because of Operation Warp Speed, because of the checks he wrote that he to this day says he remains proud of. He failed the one and only crisis he faced, and people suffered and died as a result. And morally, really, that's all that matters in the end.
I didn't mean to, sorry, I put it back on this thing. I didn't mean to rush you, so you can take all the time you want. Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Monetary Metals. This is a company I've been using for a year or two, and it's fantastic. Now, if you're like me, you probably own some gold. But also, if you're like me, wherever you have that gold stored, it's probably just sitting there, not really doing much for you. If anything, it might be racking up storage fees so that over time you wind up with less rather than more. But what if you could put that gold to work for you? I mean, what if you could get it to do something for you? And that's exactly what Monetary Metals is all about. You can grow your gold year after year with Monetary Metals, which offers interest on gold paid in more ounces of physical gold. You can earn 2 to 5% on gold and silver in their leasing program, which supports qualified gold-using businesses. And if you're an accredited investor, you can earn higher returns, think double digits, in their gold bond offerings. All the interest is paid in physical ounces of gold, so your total ounces grow and compound year after year. So over a 10-year period, for example, 2.5% annual, 100 ounces becomes 128. At 3%, 100 ounces becomes 134. At 4%, 100 ounces becomes 148. You get the idea. They've been at this for 7 years. Jeff Deist, formerly of the Mises Institute, recently joined forces with them. Their vice president of relationships, Addison Quayle, has been at my house. He's been a friend of the Tom Woods Show. I've seen him at conferences all over the place. These are our people, and they're doing something really, really creative and important. So start saving and earning in gold. Go to monetary-metals.com/woods to learn more about how to get started with your account. Don't forget the hyphen. That's monetary-metals.com/woods. Let me ask a question to each of you. Now, Gavin, since you went first, I'll ask you a question first. Let's stipulate that in March 2020, for the sake of argument, that everybody's confused, nobody knows what's happening. We can't be as hard on people in March 2020 as we would be at the end of the year. I'll even grant you that. But it's 3.5 years later now. And I understand that politically you think COVID's a no-go in terms of an issue. Fair enough. But I still want to ask you this question. 3.5 years later, we have Trump in the past 6 weeks doing the following two things. First, claiming that Florida was third worst on COVID, which is preposterously wrong. If you look at all 50 states, age-adjusted COVID mortality, number one being the worst, Florida's 36. Third worst, I don't know where you even get that from. So that's just flat out wrong. Then on Truth Social, he reposts, or whatever the term is, an article from MSNBC saying Ron DeSantis's record on COVID is even worse than you thought. Now, I'm pretty sure MSNBC's argument is going to be because he didn't enforce masking and he didn't do this and that enough. So in other words, in order to go after his primary opponent, he's in effect siding with the Fauci people. So it's like once again, like he's learned nothing of who his enemies are and who his friends are. Fauci's his enemy. The whole public health establishment is his enemy, but he'll side with them against Florida to stick it to DeSantis. Now, do you think that that speaks to something unsettling about Trump?
No, I think this is a heated primary, and I think the DeSantis camp has decided to make COVID the hill that they're going to die on, and forcing them to constantly have to defend the record of their governor and forcing them to constantly have to talk in doublespeak, as Steve just did, pretending that there were no lockdowns in Florida, that there were no mandates in Florida, that Fauci did, that DeSantis was not praising Fauci going into 2021, that he was not saying that he was listening to the CDC going into 2021, and a whole litany of other things. I mean, they wanted to make this about COVID. This is what Trump's doing, and I think he's doing it brilliantly, and he's forcing them to defend their record now, and now their record is, you know, what's being dissected and debated writ large on Twitter or wherever else, or excuse me, X. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't see anything there that's deeper or substantive. I see this as Trump being Trump, and people understand that. He's being tactical, he's being strategic, and he's forcing DeSantis to now have to play defense, and they don't seem to get that. They don't seem to get that. They seem to be completely missing the point here that they're constantly being forced. They're constantly being outflanked on an issue that was supposed to be their strongest issue. And that's why you have Steve now that we're going back and forth having to talk about what was DeSantis' policy, what he did do. And then while he says that, he also has to bring up, you know, just complete lies saying that Trump hasn't had a rally since July 1st. I mean, there was a rally this week. There was a rally in Erie. There's been plenty of rallies. well-attended rallies, massive rallies. So his campaigning has been extremely robust on the ground, despite the very, you know, regurgitated meme where they'll go to his website, Trump's website, and they'll say, oh, there's no scheduled events. Meanwhile, they'll just fly out, you know, a week out, and there'll be a filled stadium somewhere in Iowa or somewhere in Pennsylvania or wherever else. So again, you know, I want to keep it focused to your question, but at the end of the day, are tactical decisions that Trump is making, and they're working and they're effective. And Steve could laugh and Steve can say that he doesn't want to look at polls. Well, I hope he continues to not look at polls. I hope the DeSantis campaign in general continues to not look at polls and continues to double down on the rhetoric that Steve was just engaged in, which was basically blaming Trump for Bidenomics, basically claiming that Trump had no successes, that Trump was an abject failure, all the rest. I hope that the DeSantis campaign continues to move in that direction, because they're going to continue to slip into the single digits. And again, there just seems to be no retrospection here in terms of what they say, how they message, and how they position their campaign and the results thereof. I mean, this was a guy who had everything going for him to beat Trump back in December of last year. This is when many of the influencers, including many people, conservative pundits who originally never Trump, all of a sudden came out in support of DeSantis. And since he peaked around December of last year, it's just been a complete cratering. And then you see people like Vivek, people had no idea who Vivek was a year ago. They didn't even know how to say his name. I still know how to say his name. And now he's running neck and neck with him nationally. DeSantis is falling into third or fourth place in many of these state polls. Again, it didn't have to happen this way, but they decided to take a route in terms of their campaign that was going to be COVID mania, COVID focused before anything, and also a direction which was going to be to belittle Trump, his legacy, his followers, and his successes, his many great successes in office. And as you see, it doesn't look like DeSantis will win a single primary state. And of course, Steve is going to say, well, Iowa hasn't happened, this hasn't happened, that hasn't happened. Sure, there's always a new goalpost that they say. First, it wasn't that he announced. First, it was wait till the debates. You know, there's so many goalposts. They keep moving. I can't keep track of them all. But at the end of the day, DeSantis is a candidate that's going nowhere. Everyone knows this. Even some of these major supporters online are bailing from this campaign right now. And none of this is a straw man. And I want to respond to what Steve said earlier, so that I made a straw man argument. No, I was replying to your straw man.
No, you made about 15 straw man arguments there, actually.
You were trying to make a comparison between a gubernatorial result and a presidential. And I said, okay, well, we can play that game, but I'm also going to refute it. So that wasn't me making a straw man. That was me refuting your prior illogical argument. But anyway, getting too libertarian sounding there.
All right, look, let me jump in. I'm going to ask Steve a question.
Hey, John, did your question get answered there?
I'll repeat it.
No, he didn't answer your question at all, actually, Tom.
His question was, do you think there's any substance to these retruths or whatever he was posting online? And I made it very clear, I don't think that there is any substance behind that in terms of where his position is, but I think that these are actually brilliant tactical moves that Trump is doing to force your camp on the defensive, and they're working. So I encourage him to continue to do that, because the more you guys have to debate,
you encourage him to continue to keep lying.
A lot of record on COVID.
Oh, yeah, so we know we got fired by the Babylon Bee.
I'll just say, Gavin,
I'm not surprised the Babylon Bee fired your ass.
But the thing is, if Whoopi Goldberg, if Whoopi Goldberg,
a very confident person in this position.
Hold on a minute. If Whoopi Goldberg were saying things, stupid, idiotic things about Ron DeSantis, and that he's all wrong about
like saying the founders are rotting in hell, like saying that, is that stupid?
Yeah, people who don't repent to Jesus are rotting in hell. Not just the founders, literally everybody who's ever lived. If they didn't repent to Jesus, they're rotting in hell.
Founders are in hell, and whether or not they
I would have figured you might know basic Christianity, Gavin, but maybe that's another reason you got fired from the Babylon Bee.
I do know basic Christianity, but you're claiming to speak as God right now. You know who's rotting in hell.
No, I'm just saying on the authority of the scriptures, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Look, the Father except through me. And
this is an eminently worthwhile topic to debate.
On their deathbed,
as the moderator, I am overruling you both. And I'm moving on to the next thing, which is Steve has to answer a question. And Steve, the question I have for you is, I think some Trump people would say that DeSantis is in a difficult position foreign policy-wise, because he is Trump has really got the Trump vote locked up in terms of the numbers. And so DeSantis has to now try to appeal to some of the mainstream of the party. It's going to be hard for him to do that if he's taking a hard line on Ukraine, similar to the line that Trump takes. So what we've seen, it looks like DeSantis is very uncomfortably trying to navigate this and not really give us a straight answer. Like, yes, sometimes I'll hear from DeSantis that the military is going woke, and so we'll get all this kind of stuff that all wings of the party will respond to. But in terms of Ukraine, is he willing to take an unambiguous position on an issue that he would require enormous strength of character to resist the pressure that will surely be placed on him to perpetuate the aid to Ukraine? Where is he on this?
It's a good question, Tom. But first of all, I think you're giving Trump too much credit. I mean, Trump did an interview not a month ago where he said he'd give even more money and more arms to Zelensky than Biden does, if that's what it would take. So I'm not even sure what Trump's position is right now. But here's the thing. I'm going to be fair to him. I don't think that's his fault. I've been as upset and angry about Ukraine as any issue over the last year since COVID. The entire thing's a scam from the very beginning. I was very, very disappointed to see my former boss, Ted Cruz, vote for the original round of funding. It's probably the only time I have publicly criticized him since the last campaign ended, because I think this is an egregious scam. It's basically a rerunning of the Habsburg dynasty with Soros, WF on one side and Putin on the other. It's just simply not our fight. But here's the problem that I think that the next president has, whether it's Trump or DeSantis or anybody, Gavin Newsom, Big Mike, pick a name. This has been so mismanaged now that I think Putin has been so emboldened by how much it's been mismanaged that I don't know what incentives we can provide to get him to come to the negotiating table now. And we sort of created this worst of both worlds, where on one hand, we know we can't put American troops on the ground because the last few years, I think a lot of us have wondered, when will people actually uprise against everything that we're saying? And that might be it. That might be the one. And so they haven't been willing to do that. They haven't been willing to cross that red line, but they've done everything else to give Ukraine sort of this false hope that it had a chance to end this thing without giving up any territory, including the Russian-speaking territories in the Crimea whatsoever. And so now that it's pretty clear Putin has the advantage in this, I don't know what pressure you can bring to bear to bring him to the negotiating table at this point. So I don't fault Trump for what he said a month ago. As somebody who doesn't think we should give another dime to Ukraine, doesn't think we should put a soldier on the ground there, I don't fault him for what he said. I mean, you got to come up with some leverage points here. Trump, understands leverage and negotiation. And I think that was the greatest success of his administration, was his foreign policy. So I don't know that there is a clean answer here now. Because we're in a position where you could end up emboldening Putin to become exactly what their propagandist talking points were claiming he was going to be 2 years ago. So would I prefer that everybody said absolutely not another dime, no matter what, even if it includes shutting the government down? Sure. I just don't know who's going to say that now as we sit here on September, 22nd. Because of the hole that this administration and its disastrous foreign policy has dug us into, Putin may be emboldened to say, I'll just go ahead and take the whole Crimea now. It's not as clean cut of a situation, unfortunately, as I think it was even a few months ago.
All right. Now, just to make sure that we manage our remaining time, because Gavin has a hard out coming up, I'm going to have each of you now have an opportunity to ask the other one question. Now, not a speech, just ask your question and we'll get an answer. So Gavin, ask Steve anything you want.
Oh, boy. Wish I knew about this sooner. I would have thought of something good.
Oh, I did tell you, if you look in our thread.
I know. Then that's on me. Let me think. A question for Steve.
Would you like Steve to go first? And it could be percolating?
Yeah, let's have Steve go first. I'll be a gentleman here.
Steve, why don't you ask Gavin a question?
I had hominid attacks earlier.
Oh, my gosh. Tom, I agreed to do this because you said this wasn't going to happen. Okay? Are we going to discuss issues? Or is this going to be the fifth grade? Back and forth. He hasn't addressed a single issue that I've referenced. He's just reverted back to campaign talking points.
He's taken me out of context on about 39 occasions.
I've lost count. I could have gotten this from Laura Loomer. Okay? This isn't a substantive conversation.
The only one who's broken substance is you making an ad hominem attack when I've been nothing but respectful. I've literally gone note by note, line by line, to respond to all of your claims.
It's been very respectful.
Gavin, hang on a minute. Steve, we will let the audience decide whether you're getting an answer to your question. But ask a point blank question, specific, right over the target. And Gavin will answer it. I'm confident.
How many doses of COVID vaccine did you take?
Zero.
Why?
I actually led the first protest against the mandates here in New York City. We had 700 people outside of Gracie Mansion. We hosted events that were violating the mandates here in New York. I was on the front lines of this issue. I fought very hard for it. I had people, including many family members of mine, who lost their jobs, their livelihoods, their pension, their benefits because of the mandates. And it was disgusting policy. And I'm completely vax-free. I'm a pure blood. I'm very proud of it. And being able to do that in New York City, where you couldn't even be employed for a large period of time without showing vax to every major corporation, was a pretty big deal. But I was able to maintain my livelihood. Some people like to mock that now and then proclaim their Christianity in the other breath. But yeah, that's my position on the vaccine.
Steve's follow-up question was why or why not? So why did you not get the shots?
Why or why not? I mean, in general, I'm kind of a nut for holistic health. You know, I take beef liver and all the rest. So I'm a little skeptical of big medicine, big pharma writ large. I have my basic vaccines that I was required to get when I was born, but I don't take the flu shot. I've always been skeptical. And I think my gut instinct when the vaccine first rolled out was correct. And I was vindicated as months went on and the efficacy of them were shown not even be there, and then also to have the detrimental impacts that they had. So that's the reason I didn't take it. And I continue to be vigilant on this issue in general. Vaccines or other things that are in our food or toxins and household supplies and all the rest.
Hey, everybody, let me tell you about the upcoming Expat Money Summit hosted by Expat Money Show host Mikkel Thorup and two-time Tom Woods Show guest. Mikkel has lived everywhere, visited everywhere. He knows everything there is to know about international relocation and a whole bunch of issues short of international relocation, like second passports or banking offshore or whatever it is you're interested in regarding the expat lifestyle. And this whole event, which, by the way, features me as a speaker, is free. It's taking place October 2nd through the 6th online. You can check it out at expatmoneysummit.com. It is the largest offshore event in the world, and confirmed speakers include Ron Paul, Doug Casey, Mark Faber, Jim Rogers, me, also international lawyers, offshore precious metals dealers, foreign real estate experts, and much, much more. So we're going to be talking about finding a safe place to live in the world, legally eliminating your tax bill so you're not funding war, international wealth protection, second passports, offshore banking, and much more. So check it out by getting your free ticket at expatmoneysummit.com. That's expatmoneysummit.com. All right, Gavin, maybe I can help elicit a good question
yes.
out of you. Think to yourself, when you're on Twitter and you're encountering DeSantis supporters, are you ever thinking to yourself, I wish I could confront them with this one thing and corner them and force them to answer? Because I'll tell you, that's where I got my question for you. I thought, doggone it. I just want a Trump supporter to say, yeah, Trump shouldn't, obviously. There are a lot of things you're going to attack Ron DeSantis for, but for crying out loud, you're not going to say from a Fauci standpoint that he did a bad job in Florida. I mean, come on. So I wanted to hear what a Trump person would say. So likewise, there must be something out there where you say, what would they say if I just threw this at them?
I don't want to waste my question on asking something I know the answer to, like what's the path forward for the candidate because there is none, or what's the path to win the general or the primary? I guess I'll stick to sort of the overall theme of Steve's points have been that DeSantis is a guy who's going to buck the establishment. He's going to buck the talking points. He's going to buck all of the trends, and he's going to act as this independent maverick, so to speak. But how do you reconcile that with the fact that he's completely beholden to donors? I mean, all the major donors and entities that have really been corrupting our electoral system with their, you know, massive influence, the Black Rocks of the world, you name it, all these massive entities. How do you reconcile the fact that DeSantis is a donor-driven candidate, that his entire campaign, you want to talk about rallies, it's mostly consumed with fundraising events. And then when donors have been upset with anything he may have said, including Ukraine previously for the previous question, he will go and make a public about face and change his position. How can you truly be this conservative maverick who's willing to go against the institutions and the establishment if you're so beholden to your donors to pay the bills and to keep the campaign running?
That's an easy question to answer, precisely because absolutely not a single vowel, consonant, or syllable of what you just said is actually true. He's been governor of a state and still is, has a record from defying the sugar lobby to defying Disney to going after DEI and ESG and woke corporations. I mean, this idea that he doesn't have a record, he's not doing anything, is just completely false. Now, if I didn't have DeSantis's record, and my record was that I gave a blank check to Big Pharma, whom you expressed a great deal of skepticism in, and then turn around and are supporting the guy that's the biggest big pharma pimp we've ever had in the history of the White House. He gave him double indemnity and a blank check. Yeah, if that was my guy, I'd probably have to make up a bunch of stuff about how the guy I'm running against is beholden to corporations as well, but it's just simply not his record. I mean, he has devastated the corporatists in the state of Florida. He just actually had one of his donors turn on him last week because he wouldn't cave on abortion the way that Trump is trying to cave right now. So that just isn't reconcilable with his record on by any reasonable stretch of the imagination, and that's why he won the biggest win in the history of Florida statewide politics, presidential election or otherwise, last November. But again, if that was his record and I didn't want to point that out, I'd be saying those things true. It's just absolutely none of them are actually true.
All right, here's what we'll do. Since, as I rather suspected, we have not come to a resolution of this matter at the end of this hour, which is perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. But I do believe, Steve, if I may be allowed a contradiction of you here, I think much more light has been shed than you are conceding. I think people will watch this and feel edified. But what I think we'll do to wrap up is, given people joke about the attention span of Americans, suppose you had 1 minute. You have 1 minute to talk to somebody who is otherwise completely apathetic. Grab that person by the collar and say, here's why it's urgent that you support my guy. How exactly would you do it? Gavin, you first.
We're on the verge of a nuclear war that we haven't seen since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And there's been one candidate who has an actual track record in foreign policy that does buck the establishment and has been one of peace. And that man is Donald J. Trump, President Donald J. Trump. So if you want to avoid World War III, you want to avoid nuclear confrontation, you should be supporting him for president. And if you're sad that your dollar is going far, far less than it once did and your bills keep rising and you're living paycheck to paycheck, well, that didn't really exist for most Americans a few short years ago under the Trump presidency. So you could have a return to prosperity and you could have a return to peace if you vote for the one man who has a track record of achieving both at the federal level, and that man is President Donald J. Trump.
All right, very good. Thank you, Gavin. And now,
that was
Steve,
a good statement. That was good.
Thank you.
All right, Steve, yeah. You give it a shot.
I would simply say this is a must-win election. We are watching evil rampant on every front in the culture, and I don't think the future has ever been more imperiled for this country than it is right now. And the time is now for someone of strong and consistent moral conviction, demonstrated moral conviction, someone who understands the larger forces at play, someone that has the worldview to confront those forces, someone who's effective in confronting those forces, knows how to do it without creating a mass backlash unnecessarily of people who ought to be supporting us in the process, someone who knows how to devastate the enemy. And I can think of nobody better than Ron DeSantis and no example better than the state of Florida. And what has happened in the state of Florida is the best path to hope and success for the future for the rest of the country.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to thank both of you gentlemen for doing this. Can each of you give either your Twitter handle or a website, anywhere people can follow up and follow you in the future? Gavin, you first.
Well, thank you for having me. I think it was a good debate. I wish we could go longer. You could follow me at Gavin Wax, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the rest. My upcoming book hits shelves in January, The Emerging Populist Majority. It's available for pre-order on Amazon, and you can get the link to that listing at gavinwax.com.
Thanks. And you, Steve?
Best place to follow me, frankly, is Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it now, because it's the least amount of censorship. So everything there will be linked and daily shows, everything else I do. So you can just follow me there at Steve Dace Show. Again, that's at Steve Dace Show. And thank you, Tom.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, very much. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free. And we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.